Hey everybody, this is the Crystal Ball Run Podcast, the official podcast of CrystalBallRun.com, part of the Blogwin Network. You can follow us on Twitter at Crystal Ball Run. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/CrystalBallRun. We're also on Google Plus and YouTube, so if you search for us there, you'll probably find us. I'm Kevin McGuire at Kevin on CFB if you want to follow me on Twitter. Have a huge guest for you today. I'm very excited about talking to. We're going to be talking to Phil Steele, the publisher of Phil Steele College Football Preview Magazines, PhilSteele.com. You may have heard him do a radio interview or two before, or a podcast. This is actually my first opportunity to get a chance to talk to him since I got into the podcasting game, and I'm very happy to have this opportunity in front of me. We're going to talk a little bit about the Capital One Mascot Challenge, which he is now helping to sponsor with. And we're also going to talk about some of the college football stories that we're all following right now on CrystalBallRun.com, including some of the games of the week that are coming up. We've got two huge games, one on each coast. We've got Clemson and Florida State in your game of the week in the ACC, a couple top 10 teams. And then out west in the Pac-12, we've got UCLA, who looks very good, by the way, taking on Stanford, coming off the loss at Utah. That should be a huge game in the Pac-12. Should be a lot of fun. A Pac-12 championship rematch. Who knows? It could even be a preview of this year's game. Who knows what's going to happen? But we're also going to talk about some of the other things going around in college football, as I'm sure a lot of people would expect to hear from Phil Steele. He's always got some good opinions, and he's got some good insight on a lot of the stuff that we've got going on. Before we get to the interview, though, I just want to send a quick reminder to everybody that's listening that Crystal Ball Run also has a newsletter that you can subscribe to. It's completely free. All you need to do is enter your email address, and you're subscribed. We're going to deliver a newsletter to you on Mondays and Thursdays. Monday will get you caught up on everything that happened over the weekend. Thursday will get you set for the upcoming weekend. You do not want to miss out on it right now. And of course, right now is the time to sign up, because starting on Monday, October 21st, we're going to award a prize of a 30 for 30 collector's edition Blu-ray. All of the original 30 for 30 films from ESPN. We're going to give away a collector's edition Blu-ray to one random subscriber. So hopefully, if you're not already subscribed, you're going to subscribe today, right now, while you're listening to this, and you're going to go to crystalballrun.com, you're going to subscribe, and then you're going to have your chance to win that prize. We're going to be giving it away on Monday, one random subscriber. If you're already subscribed, you're already entered, so you don't have anything to worry about. But if you're not subscribed, now's the time to do it, because time is starting to run out. And it's now my extreme honor to introduce our next guest to the Crystal Ball Run podcast. I've been reading him for years. I'm sure many of you have as well. Honored to bring on Mr. Phil Steele to the program. Phil, how you doing today?
Hey, real good, Kevin. How about yourself this morning?
Doing great. You know, we're getting ready for another big weekend of college football, and I know few people out there cover the sport the way that you do. And like I've said before, I've been reading your magazine now for a number of years now, and I always love the part in the beginning of the magazine. I think you have it on an annual basis that kind of explains how much research and how your coverage of the sport of college football goes. You got to give me a little bit of a glimpse into what your Saturdays are like on game day.
Well, I work about 102 hours a week during the football season. I cut that back during magazine season to maybe 80, 85 hours a week. But on Saturdays, I get in first thing in the morning, check out all the papers, see what everybody's doing, make sure there's no late injuries or things like that. And then 12 o'clock noon, I fire up my 12 TVs in front of me, and I watch 12 college football games from 12 o'clock noon all the way until that doggone Hawaii game ends at 3 o'clock in the morning. I try to catch as many plays as possible while I'm watching the games. I have members of my staff charting the games in the other rooms. Then I go through the play-by-plays of each and every game just to, first of all, refresh in my mind what I watch. Or maybe I missed a series or two on TV number 11 while I was focusing on TV number 1. And it really gives me a good feel for each and every team in the country. And I put the same amount of emphasis on a game like Western Kentucky as I would a game between Florida and South Carolina. I treat all the 126 teams fairly equally, and I think you can tell that in the write-ups in the magazine.
Absolutely. The attention to detail you give to every program is kind of fair and unbalanced, or perfectly balanced, I should say. And that's one of the many reasons that I think a lot of people have grabbed onto the preview magazine you put together. So you have 12 screens in front of you. I'm kind of envious, because I've got one TV and I've got a monitor. I've got my laptop. So to me, that sounds like the perfect way to spend a Saturday. Would you have it any other way?
No, and you know, the good thing is you don't have to go to the wife and say, I want to watch football today. It's my job, so I have to do it. And that's to be able to watch 12 college football games, to have to watch 12 college football games on a Saturday, it's a pretty good profession.
So it's pretty safe to say you've seen a large amount of football games this season. So I'm kind of curious, at this point of the year, we're kind of in the middle of the year. What has been the biggest surprise or letdown to you so far this season?
I thought the way that Texas opened up the year was a little disappointing. To lose the couple of games they did, I thought talent-wise, they had the talent to beat both BYU and Mississippi. And if you follow the Mississippi game, they were up 23-17 at the half. They could easily have been up by 17, 20 points. They settled for three short field goals and gave up a field goal right before the half. But I like the way Mac Brown's turned it around. You know, after that Mississippi loss, he said, we can still win the Big 12. And I think a lot of folks around the country snickered when he said that. But guess what? They're 3-0. A lot of the teams in the Big 12 look beatable. They'll probably be favored to beat TCU, Kansas, West Virginia, Oklahoma State, and Texas Tech. We might just see the Texas team that's undefeated in the Big 12 taking on Baylor at the end of the year. So I think so far they've been the biggest disappointment, but in the same fashion, they can still rebound and actually make a BCS bowl game. We'll see how it pairs out in the second half of the season.
Do you think that Mac Brown needs that kind of turnaround and maybe a BCS bowl berth to save his job going into next year, or is he really on a hot seat there?
Yeah, over the summer, I always put out my coaches on the hot seat list, and I got a lot of play because I put Mac Brown number one on my coaches on the hot seat list, and I said, if he comes up with another 7 or 8-win season with this talent and with this schedule, then it's time for a change, and Texas will want to change. So I think right now, he's sort of got himself a little off the hot seat, but just a couple more losses, and I do believe there would be a coaching change at Texas next year. So still on the hot seat, but we'll see. For the record, I'm hoping he runs the table, finishes 10-2, and sticks around a few more years because he's a really great coach.
Yeah, there's no doubt. He is a good coach, and he's one of the class acts, I think, in college football, which I think the sport needs a lot of. We give so much attention to the negative side of the sport, but there's a lot of positive going on as well. He certainly is one of them as far as I'm concerned. Let me ask you, you mentioned them. But Baylor, the way that they're scoring on offense, you know, it kind of reminds you of what Oregon has been doing the last couple of years. Does Baylor have an offense that can compete for a national championship, or is there something that's holding them back in the grand scheme of things?
No, I think when you take a look at Baylor right now and look at the rest of their schedule and look at the Big 12, I mean, I could poke holes in Texas, TCU, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, across the board. Baylor could very well be favored in all the rest of their games. Their offense last week got slowed down by Kansas State. They only had 451 yards and 35 points. There's a lot of schools that would love to have that type of effort, but that was almost like a half season for them. This is a team averaging 63 points per game, 714 yards per game. Now, those numbers will come down when they get into Big 12 play,
right?
But I love Lake Seastruck at running back. To Bryce Petty, I named him first team Big 12 in my magazine, despite the fact he had never been a starter. I was talking to Gil Brandt last summer. He said, keep your eyes on Bryce Petty. That's all I needed. If he's an NFL caliber guy playing in Art Briles' offense there at Baylor, you know he's going to have great success. They've got a tremendous set of receivers. They've got blazing speed. And the defense, while they're giving up 346 yards per game, they're on the field a lot because that offense scores so quick. They're not that bad. So I think overall Baylor's got an improved defense, an explosive offense, and they do have a legitimate shot of running the table this year. And if they're one of two unbeaten standing at the end of the year, I have no problem playing with the national championship game. And I think whatever defense coordinator takes them on is going to struggle a lot.
Yeah, and I know they're coming off a good win at Kansas State. Now, obviously, this is not the same Kansas State team we saw last year, but going on the road, it's kind of a revenge factor game for Kansas State. It's still a team that can play some defense, and the way that they came back to win that game, I thought it was actually pretty impressive. So I'm really curious to see what happens with them going forward. And like we said, Texas undefeated in Big 12 play. Who knows what's going to happen? So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch as the season develops. Phil, we got a couple good games coming up this weekend, of course, in college football. You know, there's a couple I'm looking forward to, really. UCLA at Stanford really has my attention. Stanford coming off the loss at Utah, and you know, UCLA has looked really good this season. What's your take on this one going in?
You know, I think we're going to learn a lot about UCLA. Are they a pretender or a contender? And I think of the two teams, if I was to pick one that I thought was national title contender worthy, it would be Stanford, despite their loss last week, which probably knocked them out of the mix. But I think Stanford stood toe-to-toe with Oregon last year in Autzen Stadium. In fact, ended up winning the game in overtime and sort of shut down that Oregon offense in that game. I think that they have the defense that will be able to contain Brett Hundley, and that's going to be a big factor here for Stanford. They're also at home off a loss. I like the physicality that they have at the line of scrimmage. You look at how Gaffney's been doing in the backfield this year, 5.2 yards per carry. The emergence of Ty Montgomery has been tremendous. The one thing you look at when you talk about Stanford, you think of him as just a big physical team. Well, Montgomery gives him the speed factor. He's had a kick return touchdown each of the last two games. Kajust is looking great at the receiver spot. They've got the tight ends. They can run. They can pass equally. And while Kevin Hogan had a bad game last week, he's still a guy that can also run and pass. So I think defensively, when I talked to Coach Shaw this summer, he told me that they're not just about size. They've got speed at every position. I think we're going to see that shine here. I like Stanford to knock off UCLA this week. And then I think Oregon gets a great break. The last couple of opponents they played Washington the week after they played Stanford. Mm-hmm. So they get a beat-up football team. Well, UCLA, the week after they play Stanford, has to go into Oregon and Autzen Stadium. I think it's going to be two losses for UCLA. But I'll tell you what, Kevin, if UCLA knocks off Stanford this week, that's going to be a heck of a matchup next week when they take on the Ducks, two unbeaten Pac-12 teams. But for the record, I like Stanford this week.
Yeah, I would probably lean towards Stanford, but I really do feel that UCLA is more than capable of getting a split in these next two games, and that really makes things pretty interesting as far as the Pac-12 is concerned. You know, a lot of talk has been centered around the Pac-12 and their emergence in the conference rankings, so to speak. Still think the SEC is a clear number one, but maybe it's not as much of a wide of a gap as it has been, and it seems like the Pac-12 has been elevating to that second top conference. What's your take on that? Do you think the Pac-12 is the second best, or is there a conference that can challenge the Pac-12 for that title there?
I think the Pac-12 is the second best. I do believe the Pac-12 took a little bit of a hit last week, and the fact Stanford losing, you know, coming in the last weekend, everybody, including myself, thought Oregon and Stanford were two legitimate national title contenders. Washington was a really, really good team. They've just got stuck playing Oregon and Stanford. But Washington being a little non-competitive in the fourth quarter against the Ducks last week sort of dropped them a little. I think Stanford went down on the elevations a little bit as well. So, but clearly, I think the Pac-12's right now number two. And then keep your eyes on the ACC. They've got a heck of a battle this weekend between Clemson and Florida State, two top five teams. The winner becomes a national title contender. Their quarterback becomes a Heisman Trophy potential winner, and the ACC is playing improved ball, but I don't think there's any doubt right now. Pac-12 clearly has been the second best conference in college football. Are they gaining on the SEC? They may have gained a little, but to me, there's still a large margin. SEC's got 8 ranked teams this weekend, and I would favor the majority of them over any other conference.
I'm glad you brought up the ACC because that's the next game I wanted to ask you about. You know, obviously, like you said, a couple Heisman candidate worthy quarterbacks going. We've got the senior veteran guy in Taj Boyd for Clemson looking for another big win at home like he had against Georgia earlier to kick off the season. And then we've got this redshirt freshman sensation, Jameis Winston. You know, either one of those guys, they've been leading the way as far as passing goes in the ACC. So it's really going to be a great matchup, I think. You know, I think Florida State still has a little bit of a question mark for me. I hesitate to put so much faith in a team that's led by a freshman, but I'm not saying a freshman can't win you games. But how big of a test is this for Florida State? And is this going to be an eye-opener for a kid like Jameis Winston going in?
Yeah, and keep in mind, look at last year with the redshirt freshman. Everett Golson took his team to a national championship game. Brett Hundley took his UCLA team to the Pac-12 title game. Some guy named Johnny Manziel, he did a few things at Texas A&M, and they only lost two games all year, sort of won the Heisman Trophy. So there was a lot of redshirt freshman quarterbacks that did well last year, and this year's is Winston. Now, when I break down this matchup, I look at it a couple of ways. First of all, last year when Florida State was at home against Clemson, they won the game 49-37. They could easily have won it 49-30. They gave up a late tip pass touchdown in the end zone. And for the game, Florida State had a pretty large yardage at 667 yards to 426, but it's in Death Valley. Now, earlier this year when Clemson took on Georgia, they had a great situational edge. Mm-hmm. Clemson had South Carolina State in a bye on deck. Georgia, meanwhile, had the game of their season on deck against South Carolina. So there was a little look ahead in Georgia's part. And as it was, Georgia outgained Clemson by 80 yards in that game. They had a botched field goal towards the end of the game, which cost them. They ended up losing by 3. Florida State, on the other hand, comes in fresh off a bye. I think if you're looking for advantages for Clemson, I'm going to give it a quarterback with the more veteran guy in Taj Boyd. Even though Winston's spectacular, I would think that having the more veteran guy in the big game is a big thing. And then how about the defensive line? Vic Beasley's just been a monster up front. They've got 24 sacks on the year. Florida State has only got 10 sacks. So I think those two edges go to Clemson. But Running back, I'm going to give to Florida State. Offensive line, once again, I'm going Florida State. Linebackers, Florida State. DBs, Florida State. Special teams, I've got Florida State rated my number two special teams in the country. I've got Clemson back there at number 68. So all those advantages are in Florida State's favor. Now, I will point out, last year Florida State was a two-touchdown favorite in every single one of their games. They were a one-touchdown favorite in one. And so they should have won all their games, ended up losing two. So they can lose games they're expected to win. But I think talent-wise, it fits Florida State. So even though the situation favors the home team, game day on hand, a big crowd as usual, I'm going to call for Florida State to come out of Death Valley with the win this week.
Phil, I've got one more question before I talk about the Capital One Mascot Challenge, which I know you're making some media rounds for, if you don't mind. Obviously, this is a pretty important day for college football because we're getting some more information on the selection committee that's going to be used to choose the playoff teams for starting next season, which I think everybody is looking forward to in many respects. But I'm kind of curious, if you had to take a look at, let's say, 15 years into the future, where do you think the state of college football is going to be? Are we going to be seeing players being paid? Are we going to see any kind of split with these super conferences? You know, if you had to take a guess as to what could happen over the next 15 years in the sport, what would be it?
Well, that's a heck of a question, Kevin. And I've proven that while I may know college football on a weekly basis, and on a daily basis, and on a season basis when I write the magazine, it is tough to forecast the future. Because a couple of years ago, I said, well, it looks like, I think it was last summer, I'm saying, well, we're definitely headed to four 16-team super conferences. We still may get there, but all of a sudden that dissipated, and you don't know really what's going to happen. But it probably is going to go that route. I think we'll have four 16-team super conferences. We'll have the winners playing off. I hope we don't get bracket creep. I hope we don't get up to the 8 and 16 teams making the playoffs, and then it all of a sudden becomes a battle of attrition. Because when you look back at, like, the FCS, for example, when you're playing 16 and then it goes down to 8-4, you're playing like 4 or 5 extra games at the end of on top of a regular season. They had back, or 2 out of 3 years, the third place team in the Colonial Conference won the national title because of attrition. Well, that to me isn't a true national champ. So I like to keep it at 4-1 against 4, 2 against 3. Hopefully that stays the program. As far as players being paid, I hope we don't get to that level. You know, I'm a college football fan. To me, it doesn't matter who the players are. I'm just a fan of the teams that are on the field. So, you know, I don't know if the players need to be paid. But those are all big, big topics. And I think it's going to be tough to forecast exactly what's going to happen.
All right, fair enough. Phil, like I said, we're making some media rounds discussing the Capital One Mascot Challenge. I know you've got a mascot meter, so you got to tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, the mascot meters. To me, it's a lot of fun. And what I do in the preseason is I get the mascots, and then they shoot me over the pictures of the mascots, and I show them around. I show them to my 7-year-old daughter, Savannah, and I'd have her pick out her favorites. I go to my 81-year-old mother, Mary, and have her pick out the favorites, go to the staff. And then I, of course, put my own emphasis on it. That's how I get my preseason power rings, using that, using the amount of Twitter followers each mascot has, using the size of the campus, how big football factories they are. But then once the season starts, it's all about the games. And I didn't even realize it prior to coming on board with Capital One, was that there are weekly games every week between the mascots. This week, for example, it's sort of like the Denver Broncos playing Jacksonville last weekend. Rocky the Bull is number one in my mascot meter, and he's taking on Cam the Ram from Colorado State, the number 16-rated mascot. But they're battling it out. It's a good contest this week. So each week you got the mascots battling. Then it gets to week 13, and the playoffs start, and the top 8 mascots make it. And it's really easy to vote and fun to vote. You go to CapitalOneBowl.com. That's CapitalOneBowl, all one word, .com. And when you go there, all the mascots appear. You just click on your favorites, and you can vote for 1 point. You can go, if you do have a favorite that you really, really like, you can get 25 points for them or 100 points for them. This week you answer a question, what's your mascot's pet of choice, things like that. But you just go to the website, you'll see all that. CapitalOneBowl.com. At the end of the year, the award a $20,000 scholarship to help fund the school's mascot program. And like I said, it's just a lot of fun seeing these mascots take each other on a weekly basis. Last week, Big Red knocked off the Duck of Oregon. It was some folks perceived that as an upset, but it's just fun each and every week when you go to CapitalOneBowl.com.
All right, Phil, and we will have those links available on crystalballrun.com. So if you're listening to this and you need a quick link, we'll have it there for you as well. So we'll make sure you're getting plugged in with that. Phil, it was a great pleasure to get a chance to finally talk to you. I've had you on my bucket list for podcast guests for a while now since I got into the podcasting game. Very happy to have you on. Hopefully we can do this again sometime.
That sounds good, Kevin. It was definitely very enjoyable talking football with you today, and I had a lot of fun, so we definitely will do it again sometime.
My thanks to Phil Steele for setting aside some time in his busy day to talk to us a little bit about the college football games this weekend, some of the other stories going on, of course. And also my thanks to the people at Capital One for reaching out and helping to set up this interview. It was really appreciative, and hopefully you got something out of it. I know I did, and hopefully it's not the last time we get a chance to talk to Phil Steele on the Crystal Ball Run podcast. Again, the website is crystalballrun.com. Make sure you follow on Twitter at crystalballrun. Like it on Facebook at facebook.com/crystalballrun. I'm Kevin McGuire. You can give me a follow on Twitter at KevinOnCFB. And if you want to follow Phil Steele on Twitter, you can at PhilSteele042. Not exactly the most convenient, but hey, it works. And we'll make sure you have links to all of that stuff as well. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Crystal Ball Run podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We are going to be back on iTunes, so hopefully that's showing up for you. If you're having any problems, please let me know. Or you can email at crystalballrun@gmail.com. I am working on tweaking a couple things, and hopefully everything is working out well as far as the iTunes subscriptions are concerned. Let me know if there are any problems, and we'll take care of that. That's going to do it for today. We'll talk to you later.